Thursday Night Football with John Giles.
Johnny Giles is a national treasure. When he speaks, I mean, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. When he's on the show, I was in the car the other day. I parked the car and I sprinted into the house and turned on the radio. I love listening to him. I love Johnny Giles.
John Giles, every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the Go Loud app. The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.
Joe, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. You gentlemen have had an interesting morning.
Yeah. What are you going to do? I actually started this morning listening to you talking with Padraig Harrington, who, I can't wait until he's finished as the Ryder Cup captain and he's just doing golf analysis every week.
I know. I think he's pretty much the best golf pundit out there, isn't he?
Well, he was like, oh, so this guy's going to be able to win if this happens. And on the 18th, when you're standing over there, and he's got no confidence driving left at the moment. He just bangs it down there. But that's not happening at the moment for Brooks. You're like, okay, right. I'm actually going to be able to watch every single golfer this weekend and go, well, I know a little bit about this because Padraig Harrington told me about it.
Yeah, he's done co-commentary a few times at the Masters. He's guested for the BBC and he's been insanely good. And says things he shouldn't say and admits as much himself. You know, he'll say, yeah, no, I mean, it's tricky when I say this about that player and then I play with them a week later. But he seems to do it anyway. Even when we asked him about Rory last night, what the Ryder Cup captain probably should say is, Rory's a brilliant player. He'll come good no matter what. I have full faith in my guy and he's my marquee guy next year. Yeah. But actually, he talked about Rory's difficulties in first rounds and was very honest. So he's brilliant. I just don't think he cares.
He has no filter? It's like, I'm just going to tell the truth here because I don't know. But it is sensational. And he's going to be the poet laureate of golf analysis for 25 years.
If he wants to be, yeah. I mean, if CBS had sense, they pay a lot of money and they have a guy. It's Nick Faldo at the moment. If Nick ever gets tired, CBS could do a lot worse than put Padraig in the booth every week. If he wanted to do it, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, there's like maybe 10 times a year, 14 times a year. And you just set your watch. It's like, okay, it's a Harrington tournament this week, I'm watching.
Yeah. No, I would listen. He's phenomenal. I mean, there was one fella, he's often contends in majors. I just distinctly remember in the Masters, I asked him about it afterwards because he was so honest. It'll come to me. Anyway, he was playing and he was going very well in the tournament. And they were saying to Harrington, geez, this guy's got a chance. You know, Charlie Hoffman. And Harrington said, yeah, look, he's a really good player when he's in position, but when he gets out of position, I'm not so sure. And lo and behold, a couple of holes later, he gets out of position, makes a complete mess of the thing. And Harrington's sitting there saying, genuflect before me, all of you.
Yeah, well, you put the Brooks Koepka analysis of majors to him, and it was like Harrington had kind of, he was the puppet master of what Brooks Koepka was saying. Half the field are no good in these things. Harrington was like, I know I have these guys in my sights.
Yeah, because it struck me when I read the Koepka thing. So Koepka's obviously defending champion here at Harding Park and he's won the USPGA for the last 2 years. He doesn't win regular events, loses interest, finds it hard to concentrate. He wins more majors than he does PGA Tour events, which is the inverse of every other player, really. The pressure is such. But he talks about majors. He says half the field won't play well because the course setup won't suit them. So that's half the guys gone. Of the half that are left, half of them just won't play well because it's a major and there's pressure. And then he says, I just need to play okay. And then there's only about 5 to 10 guys I need to worry about. So Koepka sets off in a major thinking to himself, I'm in the top 5 to 10 here. And he says himself, I'm mentally tougher. And that struck me as a real Harrington mindset because Harrington always used to say when the weather was bad, he knows 80% of the field have checked out. So Harrington used to say, people think I love bad weather. I don't. I hate bad weather. It's miserable. It's rainy. I have to wear layers. But I do know that everybody else hates bad weather as well. So it's to my advantage if I have a good attitude. And Koepka's attitude in majors is frightening. It's nuts. Like in no time, this guy's won the same amount of majors as Rory McIlroy. 2 US Opens, 2 USPGAs. And he sits there on Tuesday in his press conference and says, half of these guys won't play well. The other half, you know, they never play well in the major. So I've only got 5 to 10 guys to beat. And yeah, I should beat them.
Is he faking that? Did he fake it into existence? Is there an element of the secret about this?
I wonder. I do wonder. I'd love someone to dig into him at that point. It's a really interesting one. But he came on the scene and won majors pretty quickly. And He makes bogey, he makes double bogey, he bounces back. He's unflappable in majors. What he says is that he loses concentration in regular events, that the setups are that bit easier, the pressure's off, he finds them a bit boring. Majors, he loves being in them. Like even last year, when Woods won at the Masters, Koepka was one of those four players that went into the water at 12. So at that point, you know, you feel like you're going to crumble. People forget that Koepka bounced back with an eagle and a birdie. You know, he just has this rock solid belief in himself. Like I said, unflappable. Yeah, it's hard to tip a guy to win it for a third year in a row. That doesn't happen very often. Mm. But for me, he's the favorite. And I feel he'll be there one way or another. You know, we'll get on to Rory. We'll get on to others. I think with Koepka, he could turn up at the event either the day before or the week before. The airline could lose his clubs the night before and he'd just have to grab some from the shop. He could be playing with a ball he's not comfortable with. He could be tired, have not slept. I think he puts all of that peripheral stuff. He says, I don't care. He just finds a way to do it and he does it in different ways.
It's part of Koepka's mentality to actually sit there in those press conferences, slag off all his competitors because he wants to try and create this arena where he is dueling his opposition players. Like he obviously said, what was it about Rory? Last year,
No rivalry, sorry,
that was this. And then when Roy McIlroy did his interview with Paul Kimmich this year, he was like, why would there be a rivalry? It's an individual game. I just need to focus on myself. I don't need to focus on Brooks Koepka. It's clearly just the philosophy that he taps into. And I wonder if Rory should potentially be tapping into that a little bit more himself because it's working for Koepka on the big weeks.
It's an interesting point. I mean, Rory in that Paul Kimmich interview said he's not a confrontational person. Koepka seems to have no trouble. I mean, he's called out Bryson DeChambeau twice now. One with that, you know, that gif of, I think it was Kenny Power, the fictional baseball player responding to steroid allegations. Just put that tweet up. You know, it's insane, but he just did it. And then at the weekend, DeChambeau, who we should touch on, looked for a ruling because there were two ants near his ball. It was ridiculous. And a day later, Koepka was in the trees and he turned to his caddy. He knew the mic was there. He knew the camera was there. And he pointed at the ball and said, oh, look, there's an ant. And his caddy looked over and he said, I'm just kidding. So he's taking guys on left, right and center. His interpretation of it, if he's asked about it, is he's not really a golf fan. He doesn't think all that much of golfers. He thinks there's almost a prima donna element to the whole thing. And he has no problem being confrontational. A bit like Harrington, actually, I think he uses the press either to talk himself up or to send messages to other players. And, you know, he had a real chip on his shoulder for the first 2 years because he won the US Open. He went back the following year and he was peeved because he was on none of the commercials. Fox had the rights. He was on none of the commercials. He was defending champion. Nobody seemed to want to interview him. And this continued really, I think, up until maybe his third major. Just Koepka wouldn't be interviewed and it would really irritate him. We had Claude Harmon on the podcast, his coach, and he said Koepka drive home and would be peeved. He's a 2-3-time major winner and no one seems interested in him. Well, the last year, 18 months, he's been about the most interesting interview in golf. So look, he's dominant and he's alpha male. And when you watch him this week, there is a swagger as he walks down the fairway. Like there's a bulletproof element to this guy and he's going to win a lot of majors.
And you made the point to Harrington last night, his form was awful all year until last week, the week before a major, when all of a sudden it's like, oh, I'm back. The tournaments are big again. There's big pots. Everybody's playing well.
Yeah, I mean, he blew his knee out at the start of the year and his form was dreadful. Just couldn't get it going. Couldn't get over. It was his left knee. And so he felt he couldn't get over onto his left side in the golf swing, which is very detrimental, obviously. And in most instances, when a player's a bit lost like that, takes a little while to find your way back. Rory's in that stage at the moment. Whereas Koepka flew over Pete Cowan, who he works with from time to time. They spent 2 or 3 days together and flicked. And he turned up at a WGC last week, was brilliant again, finished second. So just like that, he's turned it around in time for the majors. And he says, yeah, I just needed 2-3 days and I'm back. I'm sorted, you know? So he's really impressive. And most golfers don't find a fix that quickly and put it into competition that quickly. Harrington still thought he looked a little bit iffy on his drive and a little bit unsure, but Harding Park, it's not like there's water everywhere and there's, you know, treacherous holes where you can completely blow up everywhere. So it you know, as Koepka said, you know, this is how he talks. He said, this is a big boy golf course and it suits me.
There's definitely, like, golf needs him to be the person he is being at the moment, who has kind of a villainous air to him, but actually isn't a villain. And then it has some villains who are emerging, kind of perfectly chiseled and perfectly formed. Let's talk about Rory, though. What is the story of Rory? Because his game isn't good at the moment. And at the start of the year, his game was absolutely sensational.
Sensational, yeah. If anyone's been railroaded by the lockdown, it's been McIlroy. Because at the start of the year, he just... I mean, it depends who you talk to. Certainly since Portrush in particular and the blow up in the first hole there, it feels like there's been an air of, you know, McGinley uses the phrase pointy elbows. There's been just a focus to McIlroy. Now, he will argue, of course he will, that he's always had that focus and, you know, people read too much into his body language and his attitude. But there's been a discernible difference. And he won four times last year, including the Players, including the Tour Championship. And he came out this year, and sometimes he doesn't come out after a break and hit the ground running, but he came out this year and hit the ground running. He was sharp. He had seven consecutive top fives. And it looked, for all the world, like he was heading to Augusta. And it was as close as his to lose as it can be. Tiger Woods was nowhere with his back. Brooks Koepka was in, you know, the mire, injured. John Rahm hadn't kind of, you know, won and blossomed. Justin Thomas wasn't in great form. Like, it was really there for McIlroy, and then lockdown happens. He took some time off, and he's just come back, and he hasn't played well. Paul McGinley said on the Sky Sports coverage last night that he's heard that he's not quite happy with his technique. He wasn't that far off 2-3 months before, and he just had, you know, he's played a bit. Like, it's not like it was first tournament rough. He's played 3, 4, 5 times and just hasn't looked himself. So you're looking at him turning up and having found something in the last couple of days. And maybe with a player of his ilk and quality, it's as simple as a range session and a couple of balls come off exactly the way he likes it. And he sees a trajectory and he sees the route and he's back. And maybe it's a Koepka-esque turnaround, but it's hard to predict that right now, because like I said, he's had plenty of tournament rounds in over the last month and a half, and it just hasn't been there. He's been really sloppy. I mean, as ever, there's a worry over his putting. He's ranked 98th in strokes gained putting, and so that's always an issue with McIlroy. But he can, you know, he's won four times with streaky putting. His wedge game is a worry. I mean, there was a tournament there a couple of weeks ago where he landed a 5-wood, you know, beautiful. Like, he's the most beautiful swinger for golf club. From 257 yards, he landed it to 8 feet. And on the same day, he missed 3 greens from about 100 yards.
Right.
And so his wedge play is always a concern. Why that is, I don't quite know. It's something he's worked on. At times, it's much better. If you were to make a case for him, it's very easy. He's still world number 3. He's, you know, all about the majors. And this course on paper should suit him. It's long. There'll be at least 4 or 5 holes where even the big hitters will have long irons in their hands going into greens. You know, you could have a couple of 200 yard plus shots into greens. Like, he's as good as it gets in that sphere. You know, he might stand there with, you know, those holes and think, this is right up my ballpark, as opposed to everybody being able to hit wedges into every hole on the PGA Tour, which happens a bit too often. So, you know, and he's won here in 2015. He won the WGC match play here. So he'll have good memories. It's just, I don't know. I always compare him to Koepka, and Koepka will just find a way. And with Rory, there's just too often something off. You know, at the moment, he gets things into his head. I think at the moment, he talked to you and Murray in The Guardian about fast starts in majors. Mm. So in the last 15 majors, which is a decent sample size, that's over three years. In round one, he shoots a 73 on average. He's 3 shots better in each of the next 3 rounds. Like last year at the USPGA, he was 57th at the start of the weekend. He finishes 8th. So this is his thing now. You know, I want to get off to a good start. But again, you know, there's been majors where he's talked about, I'm going to just take my time in the first round, conservative play, stay in the tournament. That doesn't work. And then you could hear him a year later saying, no, I'm going to freewheel it. I'm going to play like it's a normal event and be aggressive in the first round and play my game. And, you know, he's searching. Golf's not easy, clearly. But it is amazing that he's 31 now. This is the sweet spot. You know, all the greats win a lot of majors, 30 to 35. and this is probably a career-defining patch for him. He's the clock's not ticking loudly, clearly, but he's having a glance at it. It's been 6 years. Even he said himself he can't quite believe it's been 6 years without a major, because
he's been
brilliant.
It's not that the clock is ticking on the end of it. It's just that it's been so long. That drought is so long, and we've seen in all sports how difficult it is when it goes to get it back, whatever it is, and it is that bulletproof confidence that we see with Brooks Koepka. Who else should we be looking out for? Because obviously a lot of golfers are in really good form. John Rahm's in really good form and ready to win a major. I don't know if the course, it seems to suit him pretty well. So he's definitely somebody we're interested in. What else?
Yeah, Bombers. I mean, it's a bit boring. There's parallels with Bethpage last year. The USPGA was at Bethpage last year, and it was a long course with thick rough. So we're in San Francisco. You'll see this marine fog hanging over the course. So the ball doesn't travel a long way. This course is 7,200 yards. If that was in Memphis, that wouldn't be overly long. Because it's in San Francisco, it'll be more akin to an Irish winter in terms of the distances they're hitting the ball. So it's say you're a Graham McDowell. It's really, really difficult to make a case because got hit it a long way and you'll have, you'll have hybrids into greens too often. And if you're in the rough, if you're not dead straight, there's just no getting the ball onto the green. It's much easier to get a wedge out of that rough onto the greens, So the Bombers, John Rahm, you mentioned, absolutely. Justin Thomas is newly crowned world number one. Brooks Koepka clearly suits him. Dustin Johnson hasn't been talked about much, but Bombers course, and he was thereabouts last year in Bethpage. I mean, Rory should suit, should suit Rory. Harrington mentioned Phil Mickelson as an outside bet last night in that, like I said, it's not like the fairways are lined with water and penalty shots. He'll be able to maybe navigate his round. It brings us to Tiger. He's played virtually no golf this year. He's played once since golf restarted. At the start of the year, his back was at him. Just didn't seem to be in a great place. He played once at Muirfield and was so-so. He's only thinking about majors these days. That's all he's prepping for. That's what his year revolves around. We're going to see Tiger. I mean, Tiger could be reduced to playing 10 times a year and just play all about the four majors. He was asked, your chances. It was telling that one of the first things he talked about was how he has to get his layering right to keep his core warm because of his back. Oof. And so you're talking about Koepka and you're talking about these lads who are just, let me at it. And he's like, I've got to keep my core warm or my back's in trouble. And he played at Muirfield, did well on Thursday, was terrible on Friday, and did okay on Saturday and Sunday. Spoke afterwards. He just woke up on Friday and his back wasn't right. I couldn't turn the way I needed to turn to hit the golf ball. So for your first point is he needs four consecutive days where he wakes up and for whatever reason, the back is good. And, increasingly those kind of 4 day consecutive windows feel in short supply. And then the other point is, I hope I'm wrong, because Hank Haney tipped Woods and, he tipped him strongly and he tipped him for the Masters last year. So that's a voice worth listening to, clearly. But I just have this image of Woods, and I hope it's not the case, because he just, him at leaderboard on a Sunday is amazing. But I can just imagine us seeing him. It'll be cold. His ball will be in the rough. It'll be damp, thick, Irish, horrible rough. He'll be 200 yards from the green. And I can see him taking a swing at it and feeling his back a little bit, maybe not wincing, ball not going that far, and him just thinking, this ain't for me. This ain't for me. Now, look, if he gets in there and gets in with a sniff, he's lethal still on a Sunday. We saw that at Augusta. And Haney made the point that because this course is toughish, he doesn't have to worry about someone doing something stupid on Thursday, like shooting a 10 under and having to really chase it. He can plot his way around, and there's nobody more strategic and brilliant with his mind than Woods. It's such an underrated quality of his play. So Haney's argument was he can get there on a Thursday, shoot a 74, stay in the tournament, hang around. That'll be Woods's. That was his strategy at the Masters last year, just to hang around. And that will be his strategy here. So look, here's hope. And I don't know, his back is a lottary. If you get a tournament where Woods is in it, and you're a Woods fan, just enjoy it, because it does feel like they're in an endangered species.
We're on the last 5 or 10 of those that we're ever going to be able to see and watch and enjoy. Yeah. Joe, Golf Weekly out every Thursday. What's on the pod today?
We recorded yesterday. That's how excited we were. We wanted to get it up. So we had Peter Lawrie, myself and Fionn. Nathan's on holidays. I think Nathan's cleared his schedule so he can watch every shot. Peter Lawrie tipped Matt Fitzpatrick, interestingly.
Right.
He's played well of late. Yeah, he liked Fitzpatrick. Really good straight hitter. good putter. Harrington, I can't remember. Who did Harrington tip last night? Did he lean towards, he leaned a bit towards Brooks? John Rahm, he mentioned as well.
He had an outsider. He'd somebody who was, he mentioned Phil Mickelson enjoying this course. I was like, what?
Yeah. Yeah, he mentioned Phil because there's no like disaster with water and stuff. Phil can kind of
lash
open the shoulders
the
a bit and have a crack. So it's wide open. Like golf is nuts at the moment. Any of those 300 yard plus hitters, and there are lots of them clearly. Oh, Bryson DeChambeau, we should just mention briefly. This guy has transformed himself over the winter. He's now averaging about 345 yards off the tee, you know, which is just insane.
There's a thing, there's a super super fast camera that they have in baseball where a little league coach was like, I wonder if I actually slowed this down and got some information, got big data to teach me how to do this. And it has transformed the analysis of people who could reach a certain speed but not have an output has transformed mediocre players into great players. If I was Bryson DeChambeau, I would find that guy and say, we did a lot of work over the winter on my club head speed, and it was all about, like, come up with a story, create a narrative.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's very concerned with his brand. I mean, he's a weird character. Weird's unfair. He's a bit eccentric. Like, a couple of weeks ago, he had a row with a cameraman who filmed him, he felt, for too long after he hit a bad shot, and he felt he was entitled to privacy on the golf course.
Don't look
where
at me.
He's playing in a tournament. Yeah, don't look at me.
Don't
and 2 hours later, he still said, it's bad for our brand. People need to think about our brand. And he's had two really high-profile run-ins with rules officials where he's like faux polite and passive-aggressive. And, you know, that has done him no favours, and people don't like him. I mean, he's box office, and what he's doing is actually, you know, it's incredible. I like 340, 350 yard drives. I mean, McIlroy even was playing with him a couple of weeks back and said he just couldn't believe what he was seeing, that he hit one 370 into the wind. And so he's potentially changing the game, and we may see every golfer coming out of college now look like Bryson DeChambeau. And it's this scene, you know, if Woods was a leap in 2097 territory, and maybe, you know, we've had another leap in the last kind of 5, 6, 7 years, DeChambeau is another leap. And may prompt the authorities to change the game. But the short point here in DeChambeau is he's going to be, you know, really smart fella, came on tour, does things no one else is doing. Play all his clubs are the same length. You know, he said, why is my 5-iron longer than my wedge? I should just play with a club. They should all be the same length. People said he's mad. That's not the way the game is. No one does this, Bryson. He did it, and he's done it to general acclaim now, and it works for him. But so he's reinvented his game. He's hitting the ball further than anyone's ever hit the ball in competition before, and he's been successful. He won a couple of weeks ago with it, and now this is the first time we're going to see him bring that kind of a game to a major championship with tougher conditions. Peter Lawrie, for instance, thinks at a major, if he goes offline, he's going to go way offline and he won't get away with it. Bryson clearly thinks he will.
And here especially, you know,
And well, here, mate, yeah, I mean, it's not a bad entry point, if you know, for this kind of an approach. So, I mean, he's box office. He's getting angry at everyone. Other players, you know, are sniping at him. He's sniping back. But like, he's must watch. I think he's playing with Ricky Fowler and someone else decent. He'll be in a good group. Like, everybody, and Harrington said this, Rory, when he's trying to sort out his own first round and he's scanning the leaderboard for names, Bryson is now a name that everyone's looking at.
Yeah.
And that's kind of an amazing turnaround.
Bryson DeChambeau doing things that no other sports people are doing in other sports organizations. I bet you he'd be in favor of 6 independent directors on the FAI board. He wouldn't be looking around the world and going, nobody else is doing this, so we can't do it. Which is always a good reason to do things, isn't it?
These independent thinkers are coming on to ruin Irish football. I would presume that is their motivation, and they must be stopped. I know probably out of time, but what is your take on that? I mean, if all of this was agreed, and six on six, you're bringing people on who really care about Irish football, I presume, want to do a good job. I don't think there'll just be a split on every issue, and even a lot of the important issues. Like, to be talking about the whole thing is a bit grubby over the last 6 months seemed a bit extreme. I mean, if there's any been lack of transparency, it should be looked into. But I'm just amazed that Irish football has found itself in this situation suddenly on the precipice again.
I'm not saying it's as grubby as what happened beforehand. I didn't say it was as grubby. Okay, yeah. Fair enough. But you've now trying to put it on a spectrum And to be honest, I'm astounded at how this whole thing has been made manifest. And Mark McSharry confirmed that board members are giving him information, and he's concerned about governance. He's concerned about governance, and that's the governance over the last 6 months is what his concern is. So I'm astonished. Like this is a civil war in Irish football where the board is calling on its CEO to correct something that a politician had said. I have never seen this in any of the stories going back all the way to Aircon Park. It's as big an FAI scandal as I can remember, where the board, through the media department of the organization that they represent, they had to issue this separately. That's mad. Yeah. This is crazy stuff.
Yeah, they really have presented this as a hostile takeover, as if these lads from the visionary group are coming in now and they want to privatize Irish football and take over for their own good. And if you're going to say that, you need to provide a lot of evidence, and they haven't done much in that way. You know, they've phrases like lack of transparency.
Yeah. So the board were upset about this thing, but actually, you know, listening to the press conference yesterday, we were given the ability to sign this. The president said this is a great day for Irish football, we've saved Irish football. And then a couple of months later, he's signing a thing going, well, we didn't really know about it at the time, and we backed this politician up. It's like, why are they backing this? He's not even the spokesperson for sport from his own party anymore. Look, I'm sure there's plenty more for you guys to get stuck into on that a little bit later. I know it's not the sexiest topic. It got 3 out of 10 on the Owen Sheehan sex appeal.
Oh my God!
A little bit earlier.
Oh, no, it's up to a 7 now.
Good governance and sports administration. Tune in.
Joe, good stuff. Thanks, William. Enjoy the golf.
All right, lads. Bye, bye, bye.
So, plenty more to come. Check out Golf Weekly. The best place to get it these days is on the OTB Sports app. You can subscribe to it there. The subscription numbers for Golf Weekly on the OTB Sports app, by the way, are off the charts. The Golf Weekly fans are the early adopters of this world, so they obviously recognize game when they see it.
The OTB Podcast Network with Virgin Media. Catch all of the UEFA Champions League and Europa League games live on Virgin Media TV.